Welcome to another episode of the On.NET Show. Today I'm here to talk about the .NET Core 2.1 roadmap. I'm Scott Hunter, Director of Program Management at Microsoft on the .NET platform, and I've got a bunch of folks with me today. I've got Rich Lander, who's going to come in and talk about .NET Core and the SDK and the CLI. I've got Daniel Roth, who's a Program Manager on ASP.NET, and he's going to talk about what's new in ASP.NET. And I've got Andrew Peters from the Entity Framework team, and he's going to talk about some of the new advances we have in Entity Framework 2.1. So let's move on. First off, we shipped the first tooling of .NET Core in March of 2017. That's what I would call the real 1.0, when you had official tooling. And then we shipped .NET Core 2.0 in August of 2017. And you can see from this graph here that we've had this massive growth from March up to now. And if I go forward a little bit, you can see we have over 500,000 developers using .NET Core daily since we shipped the first tooling release in March of this year. Something else that's kind of cool here is as we shipped .NET Core 2.0, we brought back a bunch of APIs. We introduced .NET Standard 2.0. So it made it much easier for people to build a .NET Core application. And since we did that, you can see in the chart here that the number of people building .NET Core 2.0 apps is much bigger than .NET Core 1.0 apps. And that's just because we have more mature tooling, more framework features. And so the message here is if you're a .NET Core user, it's time to go and take a look at 2.0 and move that direction. Obviously today we're going to talk about what's coming next in .NET Core 2.0. So there's a couple of big themes that we have here. As we've shipped these last two versions of .NET Core, 1.0 and 2.0, primarily we've been focused on the tooling and getting the framework features running, and getting the new project system to go, and we haven't had a chance to work on things like performance. And so one of the key themes of 2.1 is we want to make the performance of building your applications much, much better than it was in the 1.0 and 2.0 era. The other thing is, if you're an ASP.NET customer, there's a bunch of features in ASP.NET that we've not ported over to ASP.NET Core yet, and we're going to talk about some of those today. SignalR is a big one. That was one of the big missing gaps that we've had, and it's going to be in the 2.1 wave. Entity Framework is the same thing. Entity Framework Core started off as a reimagining of Entity Framework, and based on customer feedback, we'll add the most popular features back from Entity Framework into Entity Framework Core. And Andrew's going to come and talk about some really cool features, one of my favorites. I know one of the most asked for features, lazy loading, is going to come back in this wave, so excited about that. The other one is, obviously, people have been building on the .NET framework since 2002, and so people have been asking for some of those namespaces to come back. And some of these can only come back on Windows, but we have this new Windows compatibility pack, which is going to bring back a bunch of the things that you might have liked. I'm a big fan of system drawing because I've used it in the past to actually resize images and stuff like that. And on Windows, you can now use that again. All of us are probably familiar with something called GDPR. You probably are not aware of the name GDPR, but you're probably aware of what it does. When you go to a lot of websites today, there'll be a pop-up that says, hey, click and say that you're aware that we actually know that you're clicking on stuff on the website. This is an EU initiative that wants people to know what the privacy rights they have when they're on a website. And so we're doing a lot of work in the platform to let you take an ASP.NET Core application and make it easily support the GDPR requirements. At the same time, the whole .NET Core wave, we've been talking about microservices, and so Dan's going to show some really cool features we're building into ASP.NET Core to support microservices and running those in Azure. And then this is something that none of you are going to see, but it's going to help us deliver a better product faster is when we actually started the .NET Core project, we had three different teams. We had the .NET team, we had the ASP.NET team, and we had the Entity Framework team. And when we built the product, we had to go have each of these teams build their product and then kind of submit them to a common area. This faster engineering system allows us to actually now build the entire product end-to-end holistically in less than a day. And that means we can build faster internally, which means new releases will get out to you guys faster. So the first thing I want to do is bring up Rich Lander. And as I said before, Richard is on my team, and he primarily works on .NET Core and the CLI and SDKs. And let's talk about some of the new stuff we have in 2.1.
Definitely.
Actually, before we even say that.
This was supposed to come earlier.
It was. As I was saying before, the improvements in performance. One of the things, if you started working with .NET Core, you probably started with small projects. You know, console apps, class libraries. And you can see in this graph here that for a 2.0 app, a 2.1 app, and a 2.1 app, for small apps, they're all roughly the same. We now have people building large apps on .NET Core. And so the chart on the right shows what the performance of building a large app. In this case, we're building Orchard, the .NET Core version of Orchard, on the right side here. And you can see that on 2.0, that takes about 70 seconds to do a build.
That seems long.
That seems long. With the first preview of .NET Core 2.1, that 70 seconds is going to drop to about 22 seconds. And so you can see a massive increase in performance. And with the our goal for RTM is to drop that again to about 6.8 seconds. And so the cool thing here is, by the time we're done, you're going to find that .NET Core with the new project system is building roughly on par with what we were getting in .NET Framework in the past.
Right, and then we'll just keep on going after that.
Yeah, and we don't plan to stop here. The 6.8 we don't think is good enough either. We really want to get that down into the 1.5, 2 second range to make everybody more productive. So let's jump in and talk about .NET Core 2.1.
Yeah, so we have a set of features that we've been working on. A bunch of these, or pretty much all of them, have been built out in the open. So if you've been paying attention, then you probably are familiar with these. But if not, let's go through them. So the first two, span of T and tensor of T, they're new framework types that allow for a bunch of high performance scenarios. So let's mostly talk just about span of T. So what that is today, if I have an array, you know, it's got so many indices in it, and I want to give that to you, but I only want to give you part of it, then I have to copy everything that's in it to that new array, and then I give you that new array. And so that's not efficient at all. It's not efficient in time, and it's not efficient in space.
Because now we've got two arrays in memory, not one.
Yeah, exactly. So that's not good. So what span of T does is it basically lets you kind of have a virtual array on top of the original one, and it allows me to give you that kind of like span on top, and so there's no copying, and then you just get that window on top, and then you can actually then create another one on top of that guy if you want to pass on a smaller set to your friend, and so that's great for performance. And tensor of T is kind of the same thing, except it's specific to machine learning.
We did take the span of T work and move it all through the Kestrel engine that runs ASP.NET Core as well to actually prevent this copying inside of ASP.NET Core.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's good. Windows compatibility pack, you talked a tiny bit about that. You know, when we shipped 1.0 at first, there was a whole bunch of APIs missing. We tried to replace a lot of those in 2.0. As you know, we increased the number of APIs in the product by, like, we basically doubled it.
Right.
In 2.0, but there was still a whole set that were still needed. So customers have been asking us for those, and so we have this compatibility pack. It's actually on NuGet today as a preview, and you just get a whole bunch of APIs that you probably need to use.
And some of those APIs are actually Windows-only APIs. One of the reasons we didn't port some of that stuff to Core was because we knew that, you know, like directory services and imaging, those are actually things that talk to Core Windows assets.
Exactly.
But if you're a .NET Framework customer that wants to move to Core, this pack will let you actually use those features as long as you run your application
right
on the Windows operating system.
Exactly. Because not everyone that's using .NET Core is trying to run it everywhere.
On cross-platform,
yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
Sockets.
Yeah, sockets, we'll kind of talk about the next two together. So sockets are really oriented around inbound web traffic, and then HTTP client is more about outbound. And so for kind of the 1.0 and 2.0 era, the inbound web traffic was our major scenario. We had this dependency on this component called libuv, and we decided, you know, we can actually do a great job just building a web server on top of .NET sockets. It gives us a ton of porting flexibility. We have more control over performance as well, so we basically achieved that. So ASP.NET Kestrel is now built on top of .NET sockets. They're higher performance, and they work on any operating system that we could port to, so that's great. HTTP client, it's obviously for the outgoing scenario. We didn't put as much effort and focus on that. So we have we've seen as high as 10 times. It's usually between 2 times and 10 times performance improvement. And it just means, you know, either in a console app or on a web server, when you call out to another service you're just going to get responses so much faster.
Yeah, we're all making API calls. Yeah, this is going to make those APIs up to 10 times faster. So that's super excited about that.
Yeah, so many people are going to experience that one. On crypto, you know, cryptography is this super important space right now. And so it's really important that our product has support for all the latest standards. So in this version, we're adding support for some new ones. I think we've talked publicly about this NuGet package signing initiative. So we actually needed a couple crypto APIs that weren't in core. They actually were in .NET Framework already to enable that. So just more crypto. Minor version roll forward. So
I really like this one.
Yeah, so if you imagine you had a .NET Core 1.0 app, but you only had .NET Core 1.1 installed, with that scenario, the 1.0 app actually wouldn't run on 1.1.
Right.
That's probably not what anyone wanted.
If you have a slightly minor version update on your machine, an old app compiled for 1.0 should still be able to roll forward and run on the 1.1 or the 1.01, 1.02, 1.03.
Yeah, and it's even worse. Like if you're a developer and you have the 1.1 SDK and you were trying to build, run, and test a 1.0 app, you couldn't do that either,
right,
which kind of seems nonsensical. So we're fixing all that in the 2.1 timeframe. It just reduces a ton of friction, basically.
It's good for everybody.
It's good for everyone. This one is a slightly more...
Hard to explain. ASP.NET in the SDK.
Yeah, so basically what this is we had to spend a bunch of time figuring out how to make it easier to deploy ASP.NET to customers so they had a good first experience with that. And so and it's also the same thing for hosters. And so we now just have a simpler concept for deploying ASP.NET in the SDK. Everything's there. There's really nothing to talk about because we've actually made a bunch of things simpler. With our older model, there were some kind of nuances.
Yeah, the way I like to frame this is one of the things where we run ASP.NET in is obviously Azure App Service. And this feature actually helped the Azure App Service team because we got to a state where they were going to have every single version of .NET Core and ASP.NET Core forever printed on all their machines. And a combination of this and the roll forward allows them to have the latest version and have the system actually work.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically how it should have always been, kind of a feature.
Yeah.
And the last one is we get a bunch of people talking to us about size. This shows up actually a lot in the Docker space.
Yeah, the container space. Yeah. Building containers, how small is my .NET Core based container?
So we have some ideas on how to make the runtime install smaller. We have these, one of the things we're looking at right now is we have these ready-to-run images, which is pre-compiled assemblies. It's kind of like NGen with the .NET framework. And so we found that they're taking up more space than they should. And you don't have to ready to run everything because it's really a startup performance feature.
Right.
And if you're not touching, if most customer apps don't load a particular assembly at startup, it probably shouldn't be ready to run.
Yeah, we kind of over-optimized in the 1 and 2 frame time frame. We ready to run the entire thing.
Yeah, and we didn't actually have this kind of process where we figured out what the optimal characteristic was.
Right. Okay, let's go to CLI. Let's talk about CLI.
Yeah, so the first one is more or less what you already talked about with that chart. So what we call inner loop performance is both either in Visual Studio or with just the CLI, this idea of I'm frequently changing, you know, .cs or .cshtml files.
Run a build command.
Run a build command, see how that worked out, and rinse and repeat like the whole afternoon, the whole day. And so you want that process to be super, super quick. And so we're just spending a bunch of time there, and it's basically just that chart you showed before. Super exciting is we have this global tools feature. It's very similar to Node global tools. That's npm install-g. Yeah, so we have a variant of that. It will feel very similar. The idea is you can install a tool. These tools will be deployed to NuGet.org. And then if the tool's called foo, you know, it's like .NET install foo, brings it down from NuGet. Now you have foo in your path.
And I can just run foo.
And you don't have to be in a specific place. You can be on the C drive, the D drive, wherever, and it just works. So people are going to love that.
I love that. The part that really excites me the most about this feature is if you're a .NET Core customer today and you're using migrations, for example, Entity Framework migrations, one of the challenges, you have to have a special line inside of your CSproj file that brings in the tooling for the EF Core migrations.
And that's the replaces
and,
CLI
and this is
tool.
The exactly. And so what this means is if you're a customer out there that's ever gotten stuck with trying to scaffold something or trying to migrate something, and you found that your project didn't have that in the CSproj, it's very difficult to go, when you see the error message, it's hard to go, what do I need to add to do this? This removes all needs for that type of stuff. I mean, we'll actually make those commands also part of the SDK all up.
Yeah.
And so there is no CLI, my CSproj file is cleaner, and stuff just works.
Right, agreed. So versioning, we've had a ton of feedback over time on versioning. It's both, you know, the screens like .NET version and .NET info, as well as the actual version numbers between the SDK and the runtime. And so we're cleaning that all up just to make it super intuitive. Like right now, we basically have to have documentation to explain everything, so we just want it to be intuitive by itself.
If you're a customer out there, the confusion you might see today is you go to our website to build a .NET Core 2.0 app, and the SDK up there is a 2.1 SDK, and you're like, I want to do 2.0.
Yeah, I know.
And that 2.1 SDK, we're fixing all that. That'll all get fixed in the next couple. We're going to fix the website first, but the 2.1 will actually make this easier to understand from the CLI itself.
Last, so we have two different deployment modes. One is the basic mode we kind of call portable, this basic idea that you have the app is pretty small, and then it relies on a centrally installed runtime. That's great for web hosters, for example. The other one is standalone or self-contained, and the idea there is you have this app, and in a single directory, you have absolutely everything you need, including the runtime.
Right.
When you .NET publish that kind of app, you actually don't quite get the right patched runtime in that final output. You actually get the .01, which is bad. There's a CSproj property that you can set to specify the specific version you want, but that seems like a lot of extra work that for a developer to do.
This will just do the right thing by default.
Where we tried to fix this before, we ran into some technical difficulties, so we're finally going to fix this, and it's super, super critical.
Cool.
Okay, that's it.
Thanks for coming up, and we're going to do some demos later on.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Scott.
Okay, next we're going to talk about ASP.NET Core 2.0. I'm going to bring Dan Roth up. As I mentioned when we started, Dan Roth is a program manager on the ASP.NET team at Microsoft, and he's going to walk us through a couple of the new features that we have in ASP.NET Core 2.1.
Yeah, there's a lot of new stuff in 2.1. We're pretty excited about this release.
This first one really excites me.
SignalR is coming to ASP.NET Core. So SignalR is our framework for doing real-time web development. Think like connected client scenarios, like chat apps, or where you want the server to push updates to the client or broadcast updates to
live notifications to a bunch of clients, stuff
live
like
notifications.
That.
We've had ASP.NET SignalR. We're porting it to ASP.NET Core. We've been working on that actually for a while. There are bits already available now for people to play with. Of course, when porting it, we couldn't just port it. We had to make it better. So there's a whole bunch of improvements in the core version. We've updated the client to no longer require jQuery. We've opened up the protocol. It's publicly spec'd now on GitHub. You can extend it. We've actually implemented a binary version that uses a message pack, which dramatically reduces the wire size. Yeah, a whole bunch of awesome improvements there.
If you're a .NET Framework customer who's been using SignalR since I think we shipped it in about 2012, now we've got one for core, so super excited about that.
Run it cross-platform. Whenever we want.
Secure by default. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so security, obviously a big deal, more and more important. Browsers are getting more and more strict about sites that don't have HTTPS enabled.
Yeah, they all complain about in the header kind of that you're not on a secure site.
You'll get shamed. You'll get warnings and stuff on the site. Yeah, and you know, if you're going to run with HTTPS in production, we think it makes a lot of sense actually to do that also in development, so that you can flush out issues that are really specific to running under HTTPS. So we've decided we're just going to make it on by default. What that means is we will set you up with a development certificate as part of your development experience. All of our templates will now enable HTTPS by default. We've added HTTPS redirection middleware, so all HTTP requests get redirected to the HTTPS endpoint. And we've even added support for HSTS, the HTTP strict transport security protocol, so that the app can actually ask the browser to enforce that the site is only ever accessed over HTTPS. When you go to production, we've also made it really simple to configure the app for production scenarios. Like you can just update your app settings.json file or add some environment variables with your production certificate, and you're good to go.
Awesome. So I just build an app, and we'll automatically do the redirect from HTTP to HTTPS. We'll do the enforcement of HTTPS. That is all awesome.
Out of the box.
GPR, we kind of covered that already. That's just the pop-ups. If you want to enable your site to do the pop-ups that say, I want a privacy consent.
Yeah, we will give you that UI pre-canned. We'll also do a couple things with identity. Like we have an identity system. We'll make it so that users can delete themselves. Like you can delete the user can delete themselves from the identity store. They can also download their identity data. Like we care about privacy, and we're going to help you do that. We'll help you meet some of the GDPR requirements.
Right. We're also working to see if we can help you encrypt your data as well. But that's a more complicated thing, and so that'll be like we'll give you some tools to probably help you there. Web API conventions, rich Swagger support. I mean, I can do Swagger without tons of attributes.
You can Swagger, yeah. So if you're building APIs, you'd like them to be descriptive using either the Open API specification, or also often called Swagger. Today, when you do that, you often need to put a lot of attribute soup on your controllers to get a good Swagger document experience. We're adding a bunch of conventions so that you have to do a whole lot less. Like we can infer more about the response type, what types of error codes you return. We're trying to actually make the whole error handling experience a lot more seamless too. Like when you return validation errors to a client, like you usually put a payload in there that says, and this was what was wrong with the request. We've implemented a standard format for that payload now called problem details. It's an RFC 7807. When we will automatically reply now to invalid requests with a standardized payload.
Cool. This next one is actually probably one of my favorites on this list as well. I mean, I like all these actually. we talked before about Rich was talking about HP Client being much, much faster in the 2.1 timeframe.
Yep.
But imagine I am an API. I am calling an API today. I probably need to put a bunch of logic around my API about, hey, what if the API doesn't return, or what if it fails? How do I do a retries? And I can't imagine copying that code all throughout my application. So tell me about how HP Client Factory is going to help me with this.
I think of this feature as like HP Client as a service. Like you have all these cross-cutting concerns. You also have to worry about like configuring the client. Like what's the base address? Like where is the API you want to call? How do you flow the config into that HP Client instance? How do you reuse the HP Client instances so that the app is performant? All those concerns are handled by you just get an HP Client instance effectively out of the DI system, and then you can register message handlers that handle all these cross-cutting concerns for
these kind of policies and stuff.
Seamless.
Super cool. Great. For folks running on IIS, this next one looks six times the throughput of...
Yep.
Of
so we did a major overhaul on the ASP.NET Core module. This is the module we use to host in IIS. So if you're hosting IIS, this matters for you. Today, the way that works is IIS receives the request, and then it fires up a .NET process, and that's what really hosts
and
your app.
It sends the request down to that thing.
Passes it over. And that has a couple of downsides. One is, well, that handoff is actually kind of expensive, so you lose a bunch of perf there. Also, if that process dies, or like on startup, like it just fails to start up, diagnosing those problems can be a royal pain. We are moving that model to be an in-process model. So your app will now actually be hosted in the IIS process. That gives you back a whole bunch of perf up to six. In our tests, we're seeing six times throughput on the performance, which is great. And any errors that you see actually are much easier to diagnose.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been hit with the error problem before, which is basically the way that Dan described this is, if my .NET code didn't run correctly, IIS would then try to call into this other process. It never started.
Yeah.
And because the process never started, IIS couldn't give me an error other than saying
502 gateway or something like
there's
that.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
So in this case, I'll actually see the real error why my code doesn't actually start.
You know, there's one other thing on that I'll just mention real quick, which is that this is maybe the last ASP.NET Core module that you ever need to install. Because we've actually refactored it so that apps can now bring basically the core guts of the module with them as a package. So you install, today if we ship a new one of these modules, you have to install a new module.
Right.
In the future, your app can just install a new package, and when it goes to the server, it has all the updates and it's good to go.
So install one module for all time and I'm good.
We think so, knock on wood, but that's the plan.
Cool, Razor.
So Razor Pages was a new way of doing web UI that we shipped in 2.0. It's a page-based model. It's much easier to get started with. We've done a bunch of improvements to Razor Pages in 2.1. We're adding support for areas, so you can put a pages folder in an area folder, and that will now work. We've enabled support for having a shared directory inside your pages folder, very much how you could have a shared directory in your views folder. That works as well. And then a bunch of extensibility improvements. All the application model convention infrastructure is now being enabled for Razor Pages, like your handlers and your parameter conventions. So a bunch of good improvements there. Testing, that's another good one. If you want to be able to test your apps, and we'd like to enable you to do full in-memory end-to-end testing of your MVC applications. You can do that today, but it's a little tricky to set up because of the Razor infrastructure and the way it works. We're going to give you a test fixture that just sets it all up and makes it turnkey, so you can do full in-memory testing of your Razor pages or your MVC views without any headache.
I bet most people didn't even realize this next one, which is build time Razor.
Yeah. So normally Razor gets compiled at runtime, right?
So like when I hit the app the first time, that's when the Razor, the CSHTML file is going to be compiled, is when I actually hit the app.
Most of the time that's the way it works. And that's good because it enables you to like update those Razor files on the fly. You get that agile development workflow.
Now you're going to pre-compile these for me.
We're going to build them up front. And there's a couple of good reasons for doing that. One is any problems with the Razor, you'll see as part of your build. Like you'll get a compilation error saying you have a problem with your Razor file. Also, you get much better startup performance because you're not having to pay the cost of doing that compilation at runtime. But we're doing it in a very clever way so that we can still, if you update your Razor file,
still support the live
it will still live edit. So you get the best of both worlds. You get build time Razor and also the you know live refreshing of the Razor pages. It's pretty cool.
UI as a library, this sounds like a feature that people have been asking us for about 8 years at this point,
I guess, because
web forms had the ability to actually, you know, kind of make controls that were pre-compiled UI.
You want to share those things,
and,
right?
And now I'm seeing that we have some UI that I can share in the new world.
So build time Razor helps with this. So you can take your views and your pages, you can just build them as an assembly and ship them as a package. People can then reuse them. We're also giving you a much better embedded file provider so that you can embed your static assets in that library, because there's probably like, you know, CSS and JavaScript maybe that goes along with those views that you need to include as well. We'll make that easy as well. And we're actually using this feature ourselves. Like in Identity, we have a bunch of UI that gets included with your templates, like all the account controller and the manage controller and all their views or pages. You know, it's like hundreds of lines of code. We're just going to take all that code and we're going to pre-build it for you as a UI library that you can just include as a package. If you want to enable identity in an app, add the package, add a line of code to your startup CS file, and you've got identity. It's just that simple.
If people aren't aware, today, if you want to add identity to an ASP.NET project, basically you have to do file new. There is no way, really good way to go.
Pretty much.
Not pretty much. It is the way. Yep. You can either do file new and copy that stuff into an existing application, or just file new a new application. So this is going to let me in the future be able to actually say, hey, I didn't start with identity, but then I decided I wanted to have identity, and I can just add the package and add some glue code, and I'll be up and running.
If you still want the code, like if you want that full control, we'll give you a bunch of ways to customize the library. Like you can override the layout,
right.
You can override specific views. But if you really need back that full control of having all the code, we're going to give you that too. So we're going to have an identity scaffolder that you can just run on a project, and it'll put all the identity code back
like it was before,
and it'll put it in a nice area, so it's like, you know, segmented. It's not trying to pollute your app code, but you can get all that code back and have full control.
And webhooks. Webhooks is something that Henrik wrote for System Web years and years ago,
yep.
And so it sounds like we're finally porting that to...
We're porting it to core. So webhooks are a pattern where like servers can provide notifications to applications in a decoupled way, like basically as an HTTP request. And lots of different third-party servers, and ours as well, like support this webhooks pattern. ASP.NET webhooks was a framework that let you listen for these requests for a variety of providers, and we are porting. We're gonna start with porting a subset of the receivers to core. That's what we're gonna get done in 2.1, the receiver
side. But super cool feature because lots of Azure actually has these hooks where Azure will call and tell you, hey, something happened.
Yep.
And Azure. Now your ASP.NET core application can listen for those things to happen and do some action. That's kind of
GitHub, Azure, Slack, like all these guys support.
Yeah. If you're building an Azure Functions app, you're gonna like this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks, and you're going to come up and do some demos later on as well?
We will.
So I'm going to bring Andrew Peters up now, engineer on the Identity Framework team, and we're going to talk about EF Core 2.1.
Thanks, Scott. Excited to be here and talk about what we've been working on.
Tell us.
Okay, so one of the big asks we have is for lazy loading. So it's a very common ORM feature that allows you to query an entity and then some point later on when you access a property on that entity, to have that automatically loaded for you.
Typically through it's a relation. If I can basically just dot into a relation and
correct.
I'll just get the result back without actually having to write a query to do that, which.
Yeah, so we support reference navigation properties or collections. So that's references to a single item or a collection of items.
I know I've seen tons of people asking for this over the last year, so I'm super excited about
that.
Yeah,
and it's worth talking about. We're doing it in sort of two waves. So this first wave in 2.1 will just set up a bunch of APIs and patterns that you'll still have to put in your entities, and I'm going to show that in the demo. But the second wave where we want to get to post 2.1 is where we'll use some actual Roslyn rewrites to make this more seamless.
Super cool.
Yeah. Second thing is link group by translation. So this is another big parity feature from EF Classic. And this is just the ability to use group by and link queries and have it translated into SQL.
Into SQL.
Yeah, for a certain class of group by queries. So that's sum and aggregate queries, count, things like that.
Cool.
So value conversions is a new feature in EF Core 2.1. And this is really all about making it allowing you to have more flexibility in the type system. So if you have a primitive type that is not directly expressible in your database backend.
Like a string, maybe?
No, more like...
give me an example.
Like a custom type, so like maybe some kind of struct, some kind of point, rectangle.
Would enum fit into this?
Enums we handle by default.
Okay.
So think about a point type or a rectangle.
Perfect.
Something like that. And so there's no direct type for that in the database.
Database would have a string maybe showing 1, 1, and you would be able to map that into a rect.
Exactly. So you'll write a little bit of glue code.
Or and a point, actually.
Yeah. You'll write a little bit of glue code, and you'll tell us how to map it. And actually, a lot of the providers will be able to put in some of that glue code in their own code for the types that they know about. And so it just gives you more expressive.
That's awesome, actually. Being able to take types that don't map the database types, but still map them to my local types.
Exactly. And query them, round trip them, all that stuff.
That's awesome.
Query types is another new idea in EF Core. And so we get a big ask from customers about, oh, I've just got this view model, or I've got this nominal POCO type. And it's not really an entity. It doesn't have a key. But I want to be able to query it, use link, and even map it with inheritance, use navigations from it. So that's what we call query type. So this is a new feature coming. So you can just, in your model, declare types that aren't entities. And it just allows you to query them and put them into link queries.
Cool.
Yep. System transactions, so another just sort of ask from EF Classic. So we're just going to light up the ability to kind of opt into ambient transactions.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a big gap we have in the core
world
today.
So. Yeah, exactly. So we were just we needed that to be added to Net Standard, and then we could light it up. Data seeding, so this is another new idea we've got. So we had a pattern for data seeding in EF Classic. It wasn't super robust. It had a few issues. And we actually brainstormed and we came up with a new idea, which is that we're going to allow you to put in the seed data into the model. So in on-model creating, you can actually add in some seed data, let's say a list of countries. And now, because it's in the model, we'll be able to version it in migrations. So
that is cool.
Yeah, initial migration will insert all the countries. You could change it, rename one, add another migration.
More countries.
Yeah, delete one. And the next migration will actually do the DML to update that or delete it.
That is neat.
Yeah. So we're excited about that. Column ordering is just another kind of back compat feature where people want when we create a table, they want to see the columns in some kind of ordering that makes more sense. And that ordering that usually makes sense is kind of like the keys first, for example, and then maybe they want it in the kind of CLR type property order that they defined. So the way they wrote their C#. So we're kind of doing a convention around that where we'll actually, previously we were kind of alphabeticalizing them.
Right.
And we're just going to use a convention to put them in a different order that makes more sense.
This last one, that's probably the one I'm most excited about, because we showed, I don't remember how many years ago, it was 3 or 4 years ago at the MVP Summit. We had showed some of the MVPs. We'd asked the question, actually, would you want to be able to query non-relational data with Entity Framework? And surprisingly, we got pretty much 80, 90% of the people in the room said yes.
Yeah.
Because they liked having one API interface or one thing to learn, whether it's relational data or non-relational data. And so this is being able to actually have EF talk to an Azure Cosmos DB?
Exactly. And we're super excited about this. Part of the reason we kind of re-architected EF with Core and we kind of ground up rebuilt it was to allow us to implement these non-relational providers. So the previous stack was very relationally oriented. And so what we did was we kind of thought about it and we created a link pipeline, for example, that was less coupled to relational. And we've just been focusing on getting all the relational stuff together and all the core bits together, and now we've kind of finally got some time. We want to, you know, put out some of these ideas that we've had, and this is really talking to Cosmos DB through the document DB interfaces, and I'll show that later. But yeah, it's super exciting.
Cool, get a demo of that today.
Yeah, and it's all about, as you said, using the APIs that you're familiar with. So the kind of onboarding experience for Cosmos, if you're an EF developer, is like new DB context, query your set, add some entities, save changes. And then you already know how to do that.
Just exactly. All the muscle memory you have today would just work. That is super cool.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thanks for coming up.
And, no worries. Thanks.
We'll bring you back for a demo in a second. Okay. So We showed some of the high-level stuff here. This is the top stuff. There's a lot more features in 2.1 than just what we showed. We just kind of cherry-picked the big features that we thought everybody would get excited about. Let's talk about schedules. Our plan right now is to have a preview of .NET Core 2.1 sometime in February. And pretty much we're just going to go monthly after that. We'll follow that up with another preview in March, an RC in April, and then there'll be an RTM. You know, sometime after that, I'm not going to like lock myself to an RTM date today because the reality, we want to be quality driven, not date driven. So we'll just go look at the feedback from the RC and then we'll decide when the actual RTM is. Once again, anytime I talk about dates in a roadmap talk, I just have to preface and say, this stuff could change at any time. So this is what we're aiming for. So hopefully in a few weeks, you're going to see the first preview. So we've just showed you some of the new features that are coming in .NET Core 2.1, ASP.NET Core 2.1, and EF Core 2.1. Now we're going to do, in the second part of this, we're going to have another show that actually shows demos of each of these new things. Thanks a lot.